Do you want me to start over?
Yeah, please.
All right.
The record, yeah, let the record show.
The meeting, please come to order. Today is Tuesday, May 12, 2015, at approximately 7:02 p.m. Welcome to the Planning Commission, all of you. The first item on our agenda is public comments. We have one person signed up for public comments, Steve Maston, if you would please.
I've been attending several of the meetings, and at first I was kind of enthused that somebody was looking at what we had available here in Cedar Hills. But as I've studied the project and seen the comments going back and forth, I'd just like to go on public record to say that I think that we have a great opportunity here to make a decision that would be helpful to the city of Cedar Hills in the future. And the reason I say that is because when we take and we put a congregate care facility, or whatever you want to call it, in this location, it removes the possibility of us achieving any future sales dollars. We have an opportunity here to set some things straight for the future. In Highland, they're now building a CVS pharmacy. We probably thought a couple of years ago even that wasn't possible for this area. But I think that as time goes on and as the area grows, more and more companies such as CVS will find this as an attractive place, especially with developments going over in the Highland area on the low peak side of the North County Boulevard. So I think the table needs to be removed. But anyway, that my comment is that I'd rather not have the facility here, but if we do have to have it, then we need to we need to have a little bit of control in how it is. If they want to put the congregate care in there, then let's put some retail in the bottom of it or wherever they need to put it. So we need to be able to generate some sales dollars, which helps all of us in the city of Cedar Hills. Thank you.
Thank you. I will close the public comment section, and we have now a public hearing. Public hearing on the decision for the proposed congregate care facility Rosegate in Cedar Hills, located at 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. There is nobody that has signed up for making any comments on this, so I will close the public hearing at this point. At this point, I would recognize Jeff Dodge as a voting member. Moving on, we have received the minutes for March 26th Planning Commission meeting and April 14th Special Planning Commission meeting. I surmise all of you had the opportunity to look at these minutes. I would entertain a motion to approve both these minutes.
I wasn't there, so don't look at me. I missed the last one.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor? Signify.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Next item on our schedule of events shows review and recommendation on allowing the proposed congregate care facility, Rosegate at Cedar Hills, to traverse the neighborhood retail development and mixed-use office retail development subdistricts of the SC1 commercial zone and the SC1 in the SC1 commercial zone. Chandler?
So following last month's Planning Commission meeting, where Doug Young and Korshu presented their preliminary packet, there was a discussion among this body about the building itself, the look of the building, the shape of the building. There was a real feeling I feel like in this body that sent Doug and Corey back to the drawing board to look at other options. One of those options was to have the ability to overlap two of the sub-districts that's in this SC1 zone. Now, if you look at this picture here, the two sub-zones are there represented. The one that's shaded out is the neighborhood retail sub-district that allows for the higher-end retail. It's really designed for sales tax base. The second zone, which is the colored zone that you see there, is the mixed-use office retail zone, which has elements of retail and elements of office space, and even residential uses are allowed in this zone, whereas they're not allowed in the previous zone. As this building's gone from iteration to iteration, the building began by overlapping these two zones, and when it became apparent that that was not going to be allowed under the design guidelines, Doug and Corey went back to the drawing board and fit their building into the shape of their subzone where it was allowed as a conditional use, which is why we ended up with the building as it stands looking like a panhandle. So following the recommendation of this body, they went back and we met with representatives from the Planning Commission, from the City Council, and discussed how that overlap would occur and what process would need to be had in order for that determination to be made to be allowed. So that's why this is here tonight. This is here tonight as a review recommendation to the City Council, as the Planning Commission would like, if it passes, it would be to recommend the site plan recommend that the proposed congregate care facility be allowed to overlap these two zones. And if there are reasons for that, that this Planning Commission feels are important, that they want the City Council to know, whether that be any precedents with Walmart having already overlapped zones, where the property owners own both zones and it runs contiguous in the two sub-districts, where the sub-zone layout is semi-irregular, or else there could be an argument made that the by altering the building, there could be allowed for more commercial real estate or on the north-south corridor from the entrance, across from the entrance to Walmart. There's many reasons that this could be a good thing. There's also reasons that it may be a bad thing. And I think that's something this body needs to debate and recommend or not recommend to the City Council. Following their meeting, this is not a site plan approval. There's not a site plan to be presented. I think what Corey and Doug are going to present are the various iterations of the building and what we're looking at doing going forward. If there is an eventual determination made in this body, it would go to the City Council, where the City Council could also make that decision, where there could be a finding of fact that it's in the best interest of the city, what have you, could be a number of reasons, but that then at that point they would go back to the drawing board and come up with a site plan and go back to the site plan review committee. So are there any questions on the process tonight?
To be clear, we're not recommending a site plan or building.
No. Simply recommending the ability. Some of the concerns that we had last month were, while you meet your open space or your green space requirement, it doesn't do the community any good if it's all walled off. That was one of the concerns that this body raised. In order to open that back up again, there may need to be some overlap. That was one of the issues that came up. So it'd be for reasons such as that it would go to the City Council and then for further debate. Anything I can answer at this point?
Let's throw it to Jeff.
Jeff?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Well, then
make sure it's clear to this body what we're talking about.
Are there any questions about what we're talking about? We're not approving any site plan. We're not approving any plans. Simply recommending to the council to allow for this building to overlap those zones.
Can the City Council make that determination without Planning Commission's recommendation?
I think they could. I think it's better that the Planning Commission make the recommendation, though.
Right. Because didn't they make? I don't think this body was involved with ascertaining that competent care was equivalent in nature to assisted living. Didn't the council do that on their own?
Yeah, but I think this is a more of a land use issue than the other one, where it actually involves the two sub-districts. So I think that the Planning Commission should be involved in this one.
But the council could just move. They could decide this on their own.
They could. I just don't think that that's best practice.
Right. Well, I agree with that, by the way. I'm just curious if they need our recommendation in order for them to move forward, or whether they could just move forward. Yeah. For example, we can make a recommendation that the council doesn't prefer. They can still do whatever they want, right? That happens here. We recommend things, and then they still go. They do what they think is best. You know, that's why we have two bodies.
It's simply outlining an argument for it or against it or whatever, and sending it on to that body and saying, we recommend this, and we recommend it for these reasons. I would outline those reasons and not just say it arbitrarily. I don't think because the developer wants to is a good enough reason. I think there should be some real reasons why this is better for the community. Why, and if it's not, say that.
May I comment on that? I agree, and I know we've had talks, and I wonder because you said in your presentation that part of the reason we want to recommend this crossing over the line, if you will, is because we want to achieve some goals.
Yeah.
So we may want to list those goals. As you know, I don't want anybody to be afraid that we're just opening up a can of worms. We're just giving the developer essentially a blank check or a bigger site to do whatever they want. And I don't mean that. I mean that very politely.
I have a question about that. If we allow them to overlap the both sub-districts, or do we have any renderings tonight of what that might look like if that's approved?
We have three rendition things we were going to kind of lay out and then discuss.
Okay.
So we're going to show you some, and then we will spend a lot of energy to try to. We wanted to have this discussion here, and then we want to spend the energy with the architects and everything. We can design a lot of things, but we want to get some direction from the Planning Commission.
Before you invest all the effort.
Okay. And we want discussion also from City Council. We value that input because this is your community. We want a nice looking facility. So that's where we're looking at.
Okay, so we're prepared to discuss those different options today. Okay.
So before they throw money at it, I think they want to know that it's worth throwing money at.
The goals that I would suggest, the ones that kind of came up, and Craig jump in here and anybody else, we talked last time about the fact that the spirit of the design guidelines was really to place the building within a park-like setting. And what we were seeing was more of a park-like setting within the building, if you will, was kind of surrounded by the building. So I think part of our goal here in terms of being willing to consider crossing the line, if you will, is to get more of that park-like setting outside the building so it can be a benefit for the community. I'm losing my train of thought.
You're not old enough.
I know. I have no excuse. The southern boundary. I think the other part of our reason was with the dog leg or flag shape of the remaining subzone was forcing a chunk of the building down towards the southern boundary and closer to the single family residences. Right. I think part of our goal here in allowing crossing the line is so that we can get more of the development pushed so they can have a little more room to get that development away from the southern boundary. Not completely, because I don't know that that's possible, but have more room to get more of the development away from the southern single family residential.
What we had talked about, just to bring the Planning Commission up to speed in that meeting, was the commercial area along 4600 West, which is the east side of the property that's on the right, it's reflected on the right side of the drawing there, is probably the least desirable commercial parcel that we have. When that north-south corridor goes through in between 4600 West and 4800 West, let's call it 4700 West for sake of simplicity, along there on the southern end where the bottom left of that drawing, that would be the more desirable commercial area. Right now, it's in that mixed-use office sub-district where the congregate care is allowed. So the thought was, what if we pulled the congregate care facility out of that area and put in a commercial pad there, where it's probably a better area for a commercial pad? And in doing so, can we then overlap the building into the neighborhood zone, kind of where it meets there in the middle? And that was the reasoning. We hear a lot in this, during this whole process, we've heard a lot that sales tax is important. This would give an opportunity for more sales tax to be had or gained from the property or from the development of this property.
Speaking to that point, has any analysis been done on the tax issue?
There was one that we did a while ago. I don't know that it's relevant now because I don't really know what it was. It was done based on the actual value of the building that was proposed a year ago.
Okay, just for fun.
Just for fun.
How did that fall
out? Just for fun. The way that sales tax works is not everything that is so out of the every dollar you spend, 6.85 cents gets collected as sales tax. Out of that, nearly all of it goes to the state, goes to fund roads, goes to anyone but us. There's a very small portion of it, but I think it's about, of that 6%, one of the percents, half of that stays at point of sale. The other half of that percent goes to the state into a pool where it's divided out among all the cities based on population. So we do receive some of that back, a small portion, but it is a small portion. So if you could think about retail in that sense, if you buy a McDouble at McDonald's, you're contributing about maybe half a cent to the city's coffers, not very much. So it takes a lot of hamburgers to equal a dollar. In the same sense, a lot of people speak out against car dealerships, but car is a lot of sales tax on a car. So that's a lot of money for the city, just being frank. But then when you do that analysis, you need to also bring into account the property tax, because property tax matters. The city gets a lot of money from property tax, and it's based on the value of the property. So this congregate care facility, because it's residential in nature, it would not be taxed at the full 100% of the value of the development. It would be taxed like every other primary residence in the city at 55%. Of that 55%, the city would get whatever the city's levy was for that year. And based on these, I'm just throwing these numbers, I'm spitballing here. But when the building was, I believe the last iteration of the building was worth about $28 million, $25 million. It was somewhere in the 20s.
I don't remember.
We estimated that the city would get about $40,000 a year in sales tax.
In
property tax. So you can compare that to how many hamburgers you'd have to sell to get to that number. So that's kind of the dynamic at play. Now, if you have a large retailer, they're obviously going to generate a lot of sales tax because they move a lot of goods. So it's a little unfair to say that one McDonald's versus one Walmart, but that's kind of the dynamic at play here. So you kind of think, okay, well, what commercial entities can we get along 4600 West there? And if we can get commercial entities, are they selling retail goods? Are they just office space? If it's just office space, or dentists or doctors, all we get is property tax.
Yeah, there's no professional.
So then you look at the value of the building. So you say, okay, what commercial ventures would be successful on 4600 West? And it's a very difficult parcel to sell to a retailer. So that's kind of where the analysis was last time. If that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions?
Just in full disclosure, who from Commission and Council met with and helped prepare the findings? Or
there weren't any findings prepared at that meeting. We just kind of had a discussion, and it was Commissioner Jeff Dodge and Commissioner Craig Clement. They were assigned to that. So.
And from Council?
And from Council, it was our representative, Councilmember Reese, and Councilmember Zapala King as well.
All right, I'm just curious.
So, there's no other questions.
I have questions.
Okay. Yeah.
I have questions. Okay. So the crossing of subzones appears to be somewhat of an issue at this point.
Yeah.
I got the stuff that Jenny sent out, and they're talking about that. And it's kind of a two-edged sword. One of the purposes of the general plan was to mitigate the impacts from commercial on residential, and then also to generate sales tax. And that was the whole point behind these different subzones, because supposedly the intensity decreased as you moved in closer to residential. With the Walmart, the finding was made that they were okay to move into a lighter subzone in order, and the finding was that that was a benefit to the city.
Yeah.
Which it's proved to be. I think not many would argue this against that. But so the concern I have here is that there are a lot of those who are using the subzones as hard and fast designations that cannot be contradicted. I mean, the argument's being made that is the case.
Yeah.
So that's my concern with what we're talking about here, of just saying yes, let's allow them to traverse the zones, is that will be a non-starter as it moves forward to the council. And so I don't know that. I'm just kind of getting that feel from the what's being said and sent around and stuff. So yeah, I talked to an attorney today, local attorney today. Also, after I got this from Jenny, I called, talked to him, said, you know, what are your feelings on this? And he said, well, there's ways to do it. There's ways that, you know, they're different interpretations. I mean, it's all open to interpretation. And so it's kind of like trying to prove your point using the Bible, I think. But, you know, you can prove whatever you want. So, because, you know, and I think the concerns that were presented in this analysis that Jenny sent out were valid. It's not the only way to look at it, in my opinion. So my concern is, or my thought is, when we'd had this discussion in our meeting, that the assisted living on the southwest corner, the dog leg, what would it, I guess my question to you then, Chandler, is what would it take to realign these zones? Do a one-for-one trade of move the western dog leg, or the upper part of the western boundary of the SC2 to the west, and then move the western boundary of the dog leg east till it's a straight line.
Basically bring it to the middle.
Right. So we bisect the property north to south instead of having a dog leg.
What would it take?
It would
simply take public hearings and meetings from this body, and then it would have to go on to do the same thing with the city council. Now, the one drawback here, and this is why we're in the findings of fact, why we're talking about a finding of fact, because by Doug and Corey submitting an application, when they did, they're vested in the project as it stands now. So that means that the code, the design guidelines, the subzones, the lines that are there, everything that's drawn up when they make that application, they're vested under those laws, those guidelines, those regulations. So, I mean, you could theoretically redraw those, but it's not subject to this property. So
my understanding was it's not unless they agree to it, the change.
They could agree to it, and I think that they would. But you could. We decided that a finding of fact would be probably the more expeditious way of going about this.
I agree. I just don't know if it would be the most successful way. That's my concern.
But wouldn't we run into those same problems in the city council either way?
Well, yes, but that's, you know, because if you look at it, if we do that, because as that road comes in, I wish we had like whiteboards and things. As the road comes in from the off of Cedar Hills Drive, and it starts to bend down into the. It's not quite.
Talking about this road right here.
That proposed road. As it starts to bend down into the city's commercial district, I think it would be greatly advantageous to have that corner where that dog leg of the building be commercial
right there,
and not assisted living, because that allows you to put several pad sites down the western edge of this proposed property that would be commercial. And then would also have access off of this road into the city's commercial zone, which, I guess my argument would be, what would be wrong with, I mean, these subzones were drawn up in
a long time ago.
2000? Just, or before that?
Could have been before that.
Could have been before that. So they've been there a long time, long before anything was happening there. And, you know, it was just kind of a general vision of what should happen there. Now that we've got things on the ground, I don't see any reason why we can't make adjustments to improve it. I mean, at that time, the city didn't own the 9 acres, as I recall.
Yeah.
They're south of Hearts. So there was no...
I don't even think that was in the city when that...
That wasn't even in the city. The Hearts property, the old Jacobs property wasn't even in the city.
Yeah.
So these were drawn up with this being the commercial zone. So I don't know. I mean, maybe a finding of fact is sufficient that, yes, we will take, you know, the square footage from the assisted living, tack it on to the eastern edge, expand it out, and do a one-for-one swap, you know, pursuant to agreement by the developer, obviously. But is that sufficient, in your mind, to move forward, or do we need to do it in a more formal way?
In my mind, it's sufficient only if the city council agrees to it.
Well, that we don't know that.
And that's the thing, is the other way to go about it is, if you see on your agenda, you see the last item there is scheduling a meeting to have a meeting just to discuss design guidelines. We've talked about doing that. We're going to do it. We're going to schedule that. That would be an area where we sit down and hammer out the zone. And we say, this is what we're going to propose. And then when this body goes to approve the design guidelines, that's when we have the public hearing on the sub-districts. That's when we have the public hearing on the design guidelines themselves. And then make the recommendation to the city council. Like I said, that process could be as long as this body wants. I mean,
sure, I understand.
So.
Well, I mean, I guess that...
Either way, there's going to have to be a discussion in the city council for just this topic itself.
Okay. Well, I guess, so my concern is that I don't know anybody that's looked at this, the dogleg plan, that's thought it was better than other stuff.
Yeah.
But this fits, given the finding of fact the council made, this fits within everything. It's good to go.
And if...
Arguably good to go.
Arguably good to go. And I think that if the city council says, hey, look, we're not willing to make that finding a fact, there's still options for the development.
Okay.
But we know what we're getting at that point. We're looking at the building with the dog leg.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
And I think that everyone saw, and I think this goes back to the last meeting where everyone saw the rendering and said, you know, hold on.
Yeah. Well, the point of the design guidelines were to twofold, mitigate impacts on the residents and generate tax base. I don't think this meets the mitigate impacts on the residents, and I don't think it meets generating taxes efficiently as we could if we took advantage of the current situation we have here.
You're saying that when it augment the tax base. I know, mitigate the tax base.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, mitigate the lack of tax base. Come on.
Lack of sales tax.
It's sales tax.
Right.
But
yes.
It's also property tax matters.
Sure. No. And in these little outlying pads, the property tax is going to matter more than sales tax.
It really depends on the tenant. Really.
It really does. And I know that the bank and the credit union aren't going to kick us in much. So
they're not going to kick us in much. And
the tenants.
We have no idea what's in the other AmSource outbound buildings. We have some like general ideas, but
Where are those too? Because you know we had to get those approved so they could start digging.
We actually recorded their plat a month ago. Now they're ready to go as soon as they want to submit buildings
there.
They're moving forward on it.
Okay, great.
So
anyway, those were my questions because I
I think that's why this body needs to, if it's going to make the recommendation, it needs to make the recommendation with recommendations,
right,
for lack of a better word. It needs to say these are the reasons why we feel that this building should be allowed to overlap these two sub-districts.
So memory serves, a year or so ago, the earlier iterations of this already crossed these zones.
Yeah.
And so they, because we pointed out, hey, you're crossing a sub-district zone, they changed up their plans to what they presented most recently. Where now we're talking about, well, we don't like the density and so forth, and we don't like how close it is to homes. And now now they're back here again saying, hey, we're more than happy to go back to what we did a year or so ago and cross sub-districts again. I'm going to presume that it's not a whole lot of legwork for them to come up with additional plans because they had plans already that cross the sub-district zone. Maybe not as much retail as you wanted back then, but I would like to maybe see whether, to me, it comes down to what benefit is the city to make an exception, if you will, for them. And that's what we're talking about, right? We're ultimately talking about creating an exception for this application for this sub-district. So to do that, I think needs to be some benefit to the city.
But that's not the only issue.
It's not the only issue, but I'm saying there needs to be a benefit to the city, I think, for us to consider granting that.
But, I mean, so that's the plan if we don't grant the exception.
Right. There are consequences to not
moving
the sub-district. You can have this plan or that plan. I understand that.
But I'm saying, so
why don't we see their three proposals, and then we can talk further, more intelligently.
Well, but you can't call them proposals. I mean, they're
concepts.
Concepts, ideas, abstracts.
Yeah.
Let's see what they are.
Go ahead, Corey.
We'll argue all night.
Well, Corey Shue, Line Design.
Hi, Corey.
You guys are great.
Spell your name for the record.
Corysudes.
Do we have to start sending birthday presents now?
That would be awesome. It was in April.
We're off for a year then.
First of all, thank you again. I heard some chatter before the meeting started, and we are inching very close to 2 years. So. This has been a long process, and I got to tell you, though, after our last meeting, not meaning the last Planning Commission meeting, because I was rather depressed and not sure how to survive after that one, the meeting following that meeting was very, very encouraging. And it's because of that meeting that we're here tonight even having this discussion. At the last Planning Commission meeting, you'll recall, after showing this drawing, because this drawing represents my commitment to you to stay within our box. We have combed through the design guidelines and the codes backwards and forwards to ensure that whatever we came up with our site plan was within the parameters of what you allow here in Cedar Hills in that subzone. And the response, as you recall, was, that's horrible. And we don't necessarily disagree. And so on your recommendation to please reconsider, and I remember saying, if reconsidering means redoing the site plan, I'm not sure I can convince Doug to do that. And I didn't convince him. The meeting after the last meeting convinced him, and he was willing to do that. And we have started to look at some options. Unfortunately, I don't have any of those options tonight. I know you're looking forward to seeing them, but they are completely unrefined. There has been a lot of work. I know Doug has gone and sat with the architects for days. He has actually gone and met with Jeff at the recommendation of that meeting, saying, hey, let's really roll up our sleeves together, and the next time you come, can you show us something that will benefit the city? Like Steve, is that right? Like Steve mentioned, if it's something that's going to benefit the city, then let's hear about it. And that's really what we're hoping to get to at this point. This is legal, it's doable, it's within the box as I promised. But when you really look at it, like Craig is trying to say, Does it do anything other than meet all of our parameters? And can it be better if we work together at laying it out so that it could potentially benefit the city long term rather than just, hey, they met all of our requirements and it's good to go. So what I did, and you'll recognize all these because you've seen them before, is I went back two steps from where we were. If you'll recall, the elevations that I showed last time, everyone was saying we liked the ones before. And so what I did is I went backward in the site plan as well because we liked the ones before. This one, it's more difficult to see because we colored the building in gray. But let me just point out some of the things that we're trying to incorporate into a subzone overlap that you did like in this particular layout. It's the way these corners jog so that these facades are more human scale, and it's not, there we go, it's not all the way out and square and not all the way to here and square. We jogged them and they came back. These, if I recall, you really liked the fact that there weren't large facades. Even though this is 100 feet from the residence, you did like these ends on here and felt like those open greens were a real benefit and broke up the building. And you can see that we are outside of that subzone, but that was one step back. This is two steps back. And this is where, when we came, and this is the plan that we were showing when we got our finding of fact that a congregate care is substantially the same as assisted living. But then we were fearful because of the subject that we're talking about right now, which is, oh dear, we cross over this and that could be an issue. And so from that time forward, I was saying, okay, we'll go back and redesign it to meet all of the parameters within the subzone as it's laid out currently. And then that's how we got to our current building configuration. But you can see some of the advantages. What we're talking about is the building is more centralized. There's huge setbacks here and here. And the open space has this massive break in it that is open to everyone. And what we're here tonight for is to say we believe that there is something between here and here that we can get to that will allow potentially for more commercial use right along this road and up in this area right in here. We showed a pad here, but if we were able to get, you can see it's very faint, but there's a red line that goes right there and right there. That's the subzone. So if the Planning Commission was able to recommend to the City Council a finding of fact that it would be advantageous for us to look at overlapping our building into this subzone, we could potentially push this and get some commercial in these areas and get that building to come up with a better configuration so it's not a panhandle, and we could come up with a configuration that would say, okay, first floor, first level, we can get commercial in these areas. Now, this commercial is going to be destination commercial, such as a hair salon. I was mentioning to Doug, possibly a bike shop, something that you know is located there, and you go there for that purpose. You're not going to go to Walmart for a bike shop. You go there to buy the bike. What's that?
A wheelchair shop.
A wheelchair shop. Hey.
Are you in the market?
Whatever you need. So really, our goal tonight is, or our hope tonight is that the Planning Commission can make a recommendation to the City Council that a finding of fact that having us explore our building overlapping into the subzone neighborhood retail could benefit the community because of the configuration and the flow of the whole project, rather than us being somewhat separated and segmented off. We feel like there's a lot of advantages to it, but we purposefully avoided it, knowing that this needed to be solved. We need direction. We need some security, knowing that if we design something that overlaps, that we've got support for it, and that the Planning Commission and City Council recognize, you know what, similar to the Walmart, the subzone overlap does benefit the layout of the entire commercial area and does make sense, rather than pushing us down in that L shape. So really, that's our goal tonight. Is we're hoping to once again work together. I can't tell you how much we appreciated Jenny and Daniel's input and Jeff's input. Jeff's been incredible to work with us and roll out the trace paper. We had a great meeting. Our architect was there. Everyone was able to chime in, and we feel like if we can get that direction from this body and from the city council, we'll have a number of those meetings where we can roll up our sleeves and we can do the hard work and then bring it to you and say, okay, as a subcommittee, so to speak, we've worked with your people and we built this and we feel pretty good about this and we feel like it's going to benefit the community. And then come in with our site plan application. Any questions?
Yes, I do. On this, on the three renditions you've shown how this would benefit the community by having these increased commercial pads over here. But the other objective is also to minimize the impact on the residents. So on these three renditions, where am I seeing that it's minimizing the impact for the residents right along that fence line? I mean, I can't see that very clearly, but what I'm thinking is, do you have a green belt there? I know
we
you
do.
Have a second
yeah.
level of,
yep.
How wide is that?
That is a minimum of 15, and right here in this center portion, I believe it bumps out to 20 for about the length of two lots, right
okay.
there.
And on the other renditions you've...
The other renditions, same idea here. First of all, let me just say this. As you know, the building is already set back three times.
Right, I know. It's already set back 90.
Yeah.
I know.
We're almost 100 feet here. And so there is that built-in benefit that's hard to quantify. And so we've got that we bump out. We've got the required 15 feet, plus it gets wider here. On this one, all of these little bump-ins, obviously, I think we're probably close to, if that's 100, that's 180 feet.
Okay. Where are the dumpsters located? And are there entrances on the back? Because the entrances would need to be lighted. Those lights would affect those residents behind them.
These entrances, yeah, they would be on a sconce down.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a doorway.
Property line.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I make a comment? Kind of some of what's been said here. When you go before city council, obviously you want to be able to show them that this is a benefit to the community if they allow this finding of fact. There's two ways to do that in my mind. There's one that's graphic in nature where you're basically showing them pictures of what you plan to do. And the other is to describe in a list of goals or objectives or conditions, if you will, for this finding of fact. The concern I have about the graphic approach is that we can tend to look at pictures and either start to dissect them or start to compare what you show graphically with what eventually becomes the final site plan, make a comparison, find discrepancies, and get into maybe the kind of argument that none of us anticipated. The thing I like about making a list of conditions or goals or here's what we're going to achieve versus showing it is then we've got the normal planning commission process and we have the normal city council process whereby we can proof those how successful you've been
right.
at that point graphically in meeting those written goals. And that's why I'm okay with the fact that we're just showing kind of ideas here but not really proposing a site plan that's going to go in front of city council, because frankly we need time. You need time.
We have a stack of iterations that we're trying to refine to really come through and say, you know what, these three are the best ones. Let's refine.
And we've
got
to have time as a commission to look at that and go through our normal process to get you where we feel good about it before it even goes to city council, and we'll certainly move through that efficiently. But so just a thought to the other commissioners tonight, as opposed to a graphic requirement tonight, personally I'd be okay pushing forward a finding of fact request to council, provided we've laid out why we as a commission feel that's a benefit to the community. And essentially, so you understand, we would probably view that as a set of conditions
right.
that we would expect as the site plan begins to develop. So just a thought.
Hey, Clint. And a question I have for you guys is that, can you live with if we do some sort of a swap, SC2, SC1, or I guess it's SC3, SC2, can you, does a one-to-one work? I mean, I know we kind of penciled it in the meeting. Have you guys thought about that?
We have thought about that, and we think that that's one of those puzzle pieces that we think, yeah, if we had time to figure out how that one-to-one works and what the configuration of the building would be, we think we can come up with that.
Well, I'm not saying it has to be a straight line either. I mean,
right.
I think that goes a long way for satisfying the intent of the way the design guidelines were laid out.
Yeah.
Is to maintain the intent to provide a tax base for the city, which has been brought up a lot more. It seems like that's being brought up a lot more than mitigating impacts on residents.
That's the goal of the SC1 zone.
But that's, I don't know. I think that would go a ways. I don't know how far it would go. But I think that seems like a valid argument that could be made that, yes, we are impinging on a zone, but that's being traded back. And it fits better with what is currently happening.
I actually had a question for Chandler from earlier. What is our precedent with the Walmart crossing? Sorry, Corey. There will be more questions for you, I'm sure.
Sorry, that's a good question. In digging through the Walmart file, which is because we just have all the letters we got, much of the concerns that we had from Walmart was the mitigating the impact on the residents. And the residents that are closest to that Walmart aren't even in Cedar Hills or in Highland. So the actual distance between the north end of Walmart to the property line is about 60 feet. So that was what they did to mitigate it. And they did conditions on how much noise they could do. With Kleinfelder came in and did a noise study for them, and they had to take certain measures in order to reduce the sound of generators and AC units. Then there was the concern about traffic. There was the traffic that this Walmart would generate that wasn't coming through the city already. So that speed bump that is directly east of Walmart, the one that's got about 60-degree pitches on the sides, that one was put in by Walmart as part of their development agreement. Now, the precedent comes in when you look at the listed uses that listed as conditional uses in the various subzones.
Right, and that was the question. That was what I was addressing.
I think it's a very naive thing to treat this list as an all-encompassing list of all the retail that's possible to have in the city. Because this list was put together, 7-8 years ago. Could have been, well, actually, it was put together probably 20 years ago and updated 7 or 8 years ago. And industries change. So if you look at this list, there's nothing saying grocery store. There's nothing saying superstore. There's nothing saying. There's a lot of things are missing here. But you look at the Walmart and you say, okay, well, what does Walmart do? What is the intent of Walmart? It's a convenience market. It doesn't have a gas station, but so you can go through this list and say, okay, it's allowed here, not allowed here. There's arguments to be made. But the concession is you move Walmart back, you take these mitigating measures, these conditions that you place on Walmart in order to reduce the impact on the residents, and you end up with a product that the city not only can be proud of, but is actually beneficial to the city. That Walmart opened up in 2006, 2007, and it was almost kind of just in the nick of time for Cedar Hills, where we started getting a sales tax base from Walmart and a property tax base because it's a valuable building that helped kind of buoy the city through that recession. So the Cedar Hills is one of the few cities that was able to kind of come out of that recession a little bit unscathed. There wasn't any downturn in employment or in services provided. But that was kind of the precedent that was set through Walmart. If that makes sense.
So what process was followed to allow Walmart to cross over into the
I wasn't actually here during that time. But like
some of the people in commission,
some of the commissioners were.
Please, because here we're talking taking a larger retail into the mixed use, as opposed to taking mixed use into larger retail.
Quickly, and I'll let you get to that. But the retail uses are actually very similar through both of those subzones. So the one that's not similar is the Congregate Care Assisted Living. It's not listed as a conditional use. So that's really the crux of the matter is, can our congregate care, can this building that's akin to assisted living, can it go over that threshold? And in doing so, will give you back this commercial land in a we'll develop a retail pad that makes up for it. That's kind of the argument. So, but if you can address
the big concern process. wasn't the uses, it was in the descriptions of mixed use office retail. If you read it, says mixed use office retail designation intended to accommodate less intense uses than found in the neighborhood retail designation. Lower intensity may be due to size, scale, height of the structure, or due to a less intense land use. Along with office uses, limited retail uses, including specialty shops, dance, fitness, self-defense studios, along with residential uses, are permitted within the area.
Yeah.
And that was the concern, was that Walmart doesn't
meet that.
But the argument was that the parcel and the didn't lend itself. There wasn't anything else coming in, and the proposal on the table was the Walmart development, and that it would benefit the city, and that, as Steve Cruz, who was the chair at the time, said, they're just guidelines anyway.
If I could look, as you've driven around in various commercial areas, one thing you see is that the big box, the anchor retailer, is not ever out on the main road. It's set back. There's a parking lot, and then there's outbound buildings. You look at the meadows over here. You have Chili's, and you have all these restaurants fronting the main road, and then you have your big box retailers off to the offset in the back. And the only way that we could have a big box retailer like Walmart would be to make that determination that this should be able to cross those zones, because I don't think anyone would argue that Walmart is, reading what Craig just read, limited retail. So.
Okay.
You can say something.
Go ahead.
Floor back.
So if I may, I have a few things that I'd like to ask and just bring
Corey up. Or myself?
Corey, I guess.
Sure.
You can sit. Great places.
This is like the...
Do you stool?
This is like...
They can bring you a chair if you...
WWF. Tag team. That's a childhood thing. So
two meetings ago, you mentioned that you were left kind of depressed and such. I apologize on behalf of the city that you felt that way. The last meeting, I wasn't there, and you mentioned you were very overjoyed and happy about that one. So I'm sure there were other reasons because that, other than my lack of presence there. But and just, it's not exactly on this topic, but I did listen to the audio of that meeting, and you did finally present the list of services I've been asking for, so I wanted to thank you for that.
Yeah.
And I would suggest when you make formal application or with your formal plans when it comes to that point that you include that as part of your application.
You
so
bet.
It doesn't reside outside of the application, just a suggestion.
You bet.
So we're talking about the neighborhood retail zone and a few thoughts here. I know a few meetings back I brought this very topic up about the fact that in more intense land use is permitted in that zone, and you kind of laughed and said, you think we want it. You're asking us to build something more dense there or whatever. So that concern still remains with me. If we were to grant you access or permission or whatever to build the neighborhood retail zone, we're basically saying, hey, you can build something more intense than the other zone. And I know previously you've wanted to build a five-story building, for example, and you would be able to essentially say, we meet the guidelines for the neighborhood retail zone and we can build a five-story building here. So as this body considers what caveats or limitations or whatever we want to provide or put on the list of things, that would be one for me, would be that the intensity of that land use in that section would be equivalent to or less than the mixed-use office retail zone.
What they're proposing is to spill mixed-use office retail into neighborhood retail.
I understand.
Not vice versa.
Yeah, I understand, but everything we've seen is conceptual, right? I mean, they haven't
they could formally come back and say, this is the plan now.
But the heights and all that are the same across the commercial zone. They don't change from the subzones.
Well, the neighborhood retail zone permits more intense land use than the other zone. That's all I'm saying. And I don't want to see more intense land use just because.
But it doesn't predict different heights or anything like that.
Yeah, more intense isn't really defined per se, so that's right. My concern. So I just want to see the ability to give them permission to have more intense land use in that zone. Not that you have a desire to, but you could.
Well, and, yeah. You know, I see exactly what you're saying. And to be honest with you, because that has come up and we've kind of put a lid on that, mm-hmm. we continue to think three stories no more. So that's likely where we're going to have to stay. But since you're bringing it up, it could do some really interesting things to go four stories in that area. You know, speaking of opening up more land, I mean, for every story we go up, that's a whole nother level. We don't have to stretch out. But just know that in our house, we're capped at three stories. So
it, right.
we see going beyond that as another right. fight.
What I'm trying to avoid is create a scenario where you come with a plan and you say, we have gone through all of the requirements and the guidelines and we feel this plan meets all the guidelines. It meets neighborhood retail. I know it's more intense than our previous plan, but you gave us permission to be more intense. So that's what I'm trying to avoid in this process. A few other thoughts in the general guidelines. The general vision for that area of Cedar Hills is it's intended to be a commercial zone for the city. And I would like to see, and I know you have one pad and you kind of always had this one pad there as you come back and kind of redesign things to the point made earlier, it'd be nice to see additional retail there. In the guidelines, it talks about meeting the needs, the day-to-day needs. You know, I guess that'd be the hair salon, you know, those sorts of things. I think that this body and the council, some members would probably want to have that met. I think people will probably debate the quantity thereof, but increasing the amount of retail you've provided and indicated to date might help in that cause of granting you access to build in that particular sub-district, since it's supposed to be devoted more towards, you know, retail. So you may want to increase your retail aspect of that. I think you kind of alluded to that earlier, that you may have some
interest. Yeah, I think going through this process, everyone, including myself, has learned a little more about retail. Unfortunately, retail is not like the Field of Dreams. You know, if you build it, it just won't show up. It takes rooftops and it takes people and it takes massive amounts of traffic, and that's why you're seeing what you're seeing along the freeway, and that's where all the retail is happening. And we know that there's been some studies. We've actually gone out and talked to Boyer and others, and it's a difficult commercial piece of ground. It is, but that's why I'm saying the types of retail that we're envisioning are retail services that our users and the users or the residents of the community could potentially benefit from, because we're not going to get pull a lot of people in here.
Right. One of the things you had in your iterations from even over almost 2 years ago, when you first came to the city, you had a grand plan where you were going to develop the whole thing. You wanted to buy the city land. You're going to talk about movie theaters, and you had walkways and water fountains and parks and park-like atmosphere. It was, and I think the word you used was to be a gathering spot, you know, for the city of Cedar Hills. And our guidelines talk about how that is the intent. That's the intended use for this, is to be a gathering spot. I like the fact that you mentioned earlier that this courtyard would be open to all. I don't know what can be done around doing something in that realm for the city, for gathering or community access, those sorts of things. I hate to have a nice courtyard there and then have the city feel like, well, that's, we can't go there because that's for them. I'm just saying you might want to consider how you can bring that atmosphere back that you originally presented conceptually when you came. So that's also in the design, the guidelines. It's supposed to be a place for the city to gather.
Great.
What else is on my list here? So couple observations. It says here in the neighborhood retail that commercial uses that are not focused on generating on-site sales, which is you, should be encouraged to utilize properties that do not front 4800 West. So that's good. You're not on 4800 West asking to be there. I would point out that the city has, there are permitted uses in this zone that don't create sales tax revenue. There's banks. For whatever reason, we let a bank on 4800 West, even though they're not encouraged to be there. I don't recall a lot of people being too concerned about that, but we allowed a bank to be on that corner.
And a credit union on the other one.
What's that?
And a credit union on the other one.
Right, and a credit union on the other one. Check cashing services, I don't know if we get sales tax off that. Churches are permitted, community services, and residential attached units. So, I mean, in the neighborhood retail section, the only thing that there's only two aspects that are carved out of here that are not permitted. I guess churches are not permitted technically, but the other is assisted living. So there are examples of entities that don't generate sales tax revenue that are permitted to be here, but they're encouraged to be not 4800 West, which is where you are. So I don't have an issue with that aspect of your location and the fact you're not generating sales tax revenue.
David?
Yeah.
Can I just correct one thing?
Sure.
None of those are permitted. They're all conditional use. They all have seats on them, right?
Every use listed in the SC1 zone is considered conditional.
Sure. It's a conditional use that is on a list of things that
could possibly be used
or as a guideline or encouraged to permit in that zone, if you will, that sub-district. But you're right. They are conditional use. The other point I was going to bring up was I personally have a kind of hard time recommending that we allow you to cross over the sub-district. I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I think we could end up with a better building. I always kind of felt that way, that we could end up with a better overall building and atmosphere if we work together on that and allow that. But my only concern is that I don't know that I can recommend such a thing when it's all conceptual. I know it costs you time and money, but I'd rather you come and say, this is what I want to put here, right here. Can we do that? I'd rather do that than say, sure, you have permission to bring something to us, and we have already granted you permission, if you will, to have your building in neighborhood retail, not even knowing what the building's like.
But we haven't granted. This is just giving them that option. The building still has to go past this body. So, I mean, you're not saying you can put whatever you want there. You're saying that possibility exists if this body approves it. That's all you're doing. You got to bear that in mind. We're not saying this is blank check, whatever you want, you know, you can overlap it. This is feel free to bring us something that overlaps, and the possibility exists that it will be approved. Because right now that they don't know that that's even a possibility. So what they're trying to get is for us to say that's a possibility and the city council to say that's a possibility. It's not saying anything about the building that they're going to bring. If it's still a horrible building, we'll say that's a horrible building. Try again. So that's what I'm saying. We're not vesting them in any building, any structure, any floor plan right now. We're just saying the possibility exists for you to step over into that other zone. So I'm just trying to allay your concern that it's not that we're not giving them any approval for any kind of a design.
I understand that. It's just hard for me to conceptualize when you're asking we would like to come propose a building here, but please give us permission to
overstep the line. All they're saying is can we draw a building that goes over this line?
Right.
Yes or no. And we're trying to come up with reasons why that would be beneficial. Or not. I mean, if you don't think it's beneficial, then, I mean, there's that argument, too.
Yeah, I think I've already stated I think it'd be beneficial. I think we'd have a better outcome. I think
it gives us more options. I don't know.
So what's let me ask, other than your goodwill for the city, I mean, you have a building you saw a recommendation for, and, you know, they got tabled, and here we are again. What's in it for you? What's in it for you to, why not just say we have our plan, it meets your guidelines? You've said that before. You already feel it meets all the whatever. Why not just say this is our application? What's in it for you to continue this process?
Doug Young, Salt Lake City. That's a really good question. We like to build beautiful things. And I've said it from the beginning that the building with the dog leg on it was not an attractive building. It was something that we wouldn't really be as proud of as a lot of the other architecture that we've done. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to us. I think aesthetically, I think we don't want to ever be referred to as the building with a dog leg. it's pleasing to the city. I think that the approach that, especially, which is unusual, you have a planning commission that actually has an architect involved, and that's actually very helpful. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you have a lot of people in the planning commission that are unqualified to make solid recommendations in architecture, and it's been very helpful. And so that's what we're looking forward to, is that. And really, at the end of the day, even though we kind of came to blows for a moment, you know, sometimes you can kind of sit back and kind of reevaluate the situation and say, let's just make the best situation for the community and everybody on a project like this. So that's why.
Hey, Doug, one question. What's the name of your facility in Riverton?
Pardon?
What's the name of your facility? You have a facility in Riverton, right?
We have one in Harriman, under construction, right in South Jordan there. It's, and we have another one that's completed in Draper. If you go inside that one, you'll be glad that this one's a three-story.
What's the name of the one in Draper?
It's Rosegate.
Rosegate.
They're all Rosegates. Okay. They look like five-star hotels when you walk inside of them. They're beautiful on the inside. The three-story is what I would really like to build here, although the five-story would be too much in this community. The five-story, which we always do in general, except the one in Sandy, which was the first facility, but that's really the Sandy store, and many of you have been there, is really a B-plus, okay? It's a B-plus, but the facility in Draper is an A.
What do you give the dog leg rank? What do you rank dog leg?
That would be a C. Okay. I'd have to give it a C.
But you're still willing to spend your own money on a C, though, right?
Well, the thing is that you have an unusual location here that's close to the temple, close to the hospital. Demographically, your income's here around 80,000, and a lot of people want to move their parents by them. And this location is such an ideal location, demographically and otherwise, that it's in high demand. And so there's a lot of reasons to do that. But believe it, even if we had to do a building like the one we're talking about, architecturally, it'll still look great. It just won't be as nice as what we can accomplish going, having some capabilities.
What's the lowest percentage capacity you have in any one of your Rose Gates ever? I mean, what's...
They run at probably 90, 98 to 100% always. It takes... A full facility is usually about 97% because people come and go. But the people that come in to these facilities like to stay there. And they take care of the place. And they maintain them. It's a place that they like to
be. Since Draper is new, what percent is it at now?
Well, we had it's brand new, and we had like in 90 reservations going in. I checked on it today, and they have like 45 completed contracts on it, and we just opened up 5 days ago. It'll be filled. It'll take about a year and a half to fill it. The seniors take a little longer. Sometimes they have homes to sell. Sometimes they just think things out farther in the future. But it takes about a year and a half to fill a facility like that. It took us about 12, 13 months to fill the Sandy location.
I know this is an apple to orange comparison here, uh-huh. But you may be familiar with the Garbutt Home project just due south of here.
Yeah.
That's focused on 55 plus individuals. They seem to be having a hard time selling those things. Was it Deerfield Elementary?
Yeah.
The garages. They don't like the garages.
They don't like the garages.
That's what one of the homeowner association president told us when we approved that different design.
I went in there and there's stairs too.
Yeah.
But it's so not the same comparison. I just was, but every time I drive by there, I'm like, is there really a demand for this or not? Yeah. Because these garbage homes aren't selling very fast. So I just.
Yeah.
That's the question about your capacity.
Right. There is. It's probably in the top 2% of products that banks want to put their money on. And so it's a very solid business.
So what sort of guidelines will we attach to this? I've got one here, a park-like setting to a...
We're discussing whether the development can step over the line at this point.
And this would be making a motion with the guidelines attached to it.
Well, we'd be attaching findings of fact.
Not conditional uses. Right.
Not at this point, no. My understanding, am I wrong, Chandler?
Say that again.
I said, in my understanding, at this point, we're recommending a finding of fact that it would, that the this development can cross subzones.
Yes, and I think that it would be appropriate, and I think Jeff brought this up, to make goals, to make guidelines or conditions upon which, so like you said, it's not a blank check to do whatever you want. It's to, and I've written some of them down, was the spirit of the design guidelines was to create park-like setting. There was more commercial opportunities on the north-south corridor going through the commercial design. Making landscape open to public was one. So, I mean, there's a number that we've discussed right now, and I think these are the things that need to accompany the recommendation to the city council so that they know why the recommendation was made.
Okay. Well, and the motion itself says, in an effort to maximize open space, reduce the scale of the building, thereby meeting this intent of the SC zone and design guidelines for commercial development subject to, and then ... So even in the motion, the language suggested in the packet, it includes two conditions, if you will, or goals, to maximize open space, reduce the scale of buildings. So we can decide whether we want to modify those two goals or add to them at the end of the motion, that kind of thing.
Well, I agree. I think it needs to include all the things that have been discussed so they're recorded as, I mean, the point of this is so that at some later date, if someone comes and says, why did you make that decision? The decision was made for reasons. It wasn't just an arbitrary, capricious decision that this body made. There were reasons that decision was made.
And those two reasons that are listed in the motion, feel free to adjust them, pull them out. Those are the two of the motion. Those are two of the reasons that spurred the discussion, the meeting that we had after the last planning commission, was the access to open space and the sheer scale of the building on that south end. So feel free to modify those. Those are just suggestions. The whole motion is a suggestion.
And that's back to my earlier comment. That, for me, it's the reasons why that I mentioned earlier. That I don't know if I can support doing this at this time because I don't know what benefit it is to the city to grant them permission to do that.
Well, but go back to your dog leg. Oh, you got the, who's got the clicker? Somebody click.
I don't know which one is the clicker.
The argument that I'm making is that, now you ruined it.
Yeah.
Who gave him the clicker?
I know where you're going, but my point is they could come back with our permission and still propose a dog leg.
Right. Yeah. You're right, but this gives them the option to put commercial where that dog leg sits, which given that north-south road that's coming in, I mean, it's coming in.
Right. They may or they may not. I mean, we don't know, right? I mean, they may not come back and put retail there.
That gives them but we don't have – then we say, no, put retail there. I mean, all this is saying is the possibility exists for you to reconfigure your building and overstep that bound. My argument is that we push for a one-to-one trade. So anything that they take off of the dog leg gets traded back as commercial in that north-south zone. That would be my argument. They said they've indicated they could live with that. So if it's a one-to-one trade, I don't see where your concern would be. for every foot they overstep, then they have to shorten up the where they're that section of SC2. So I guess that's why I'm not following you. Sorry.
I just like to know what the plan is going to be. If we're going to allow them a permission and a kind of exception, like, hey, you can run the sub-district, I'd like to know the benefit.
But we're not approving the...
There may be no benefit. They may come back and apply and not increase the retail. They may not do what we kind of encourage them to do.
But then we have no... Then we
turn them down.
Then we turn them down. I mean,
But on what basis, though? They probably meet all the guidelines.
What's that?
They may meet all the guidelines. What basis?
I believe that's why the chairman was saying, let's put the restrictions on there. If it does not substantively meet these goals, we will turn you down. Mm-hmm. So then we have a basis, and it won't be arbitrary or capricious.
But yeah, and my argument is it's a one-to-one swap. So if you're stepping over, then you're proposing commercial for that swap land, so that, you know, the square footage remains the same. And if that, and like you said, if they come back with something different, then say, well, that wasn't part of the deal.
Back to the drawing board.
So essentially, we need to write a motion tonight.
I was hoping you were doing that right now.
That's what I'm doing. Okay, actually, yeah, I'm correct. So we kind of need to write a motion and then talk about it.
Sure.
And then take a vote on it.
And my understanding, Chandler, is we're...
What do we reckon? What do we... I don't even remember what we're doing.
What are we doing here?
We're recommending.
We're recommending...
We're not approving. We're just recommending to the council. The council will be the one that makes the actual approval.
Okay, so what we're doing is recommending...
To traverse.
A finding of fact. I mean, we're not really recommending a proposal.
That's right.
No, we're not recommending it. We're not recommending any proposal. Just the finding.
Is the city so we are making a finding of fact.
We're
are we encouraging them to make?
We're encouraging them to make the finding of fact so that Doug and Corey can come back with a site plan that overlaps those zones and that
meets the stipulation
simply on the basis of it overlapping those zones.
And the finding of fact would be based on some restrictions that we would put in place tonight.
Exactly.
Well, and that they would add to or subtract to right. from at that point.
Yeah.
The restrictions that this body makes aren't locked in stone until the council passes them as
right.
part of the finding of fact. So if the council feels differently,
but
these are just recommendations.
My understanding is that this body does not make findings of facts.
It doesn't. It's a recommendation to the council to make the finding of fact.
Okay.
We do. We set them aside and recommend. Just as a joke.
We set. Well, I didn't hear what you said.
We do all the time, but we just set it aside and recommend instead.
Okay, back to the criteria. What criteria are we going to attach to this motion? Let's discuss it before we make the motion.
Can I read something, maybe?
Okay.
So just looking at the recommended language, the first four lines are probably fine, all the way down to in an effort to maximize open space, and I might insert visible and accessible to the public, both those things, and reduce the scale of the building, in particular along the southern property line, adjacent to single-family residential, to allow the possibility of a one-to-one area trade between commercial, mixed-use office retail, and neighborhood retail. Those, I think, are the three that I was...
Well, I would, on the first sentence, though, I would strike the site plan proposal for Rosegate located at...
Yeah, oh. that's more language.
I would eliminate that and just say I recommend a finding of fact. Just skip all that and go right to a finding of fact that in order to meet the intent of the SC1 subzones.
Thank you.
I'd like to see something about the intensity being equivalent to or less than the mixed-use office retail in that motion someplace.
For what, for their building or for their proposed commercial adjacent to their building?
Whatever they're applying for. I mean,
I mean, Corey a minute ago was excited about four stories again, possibly. So
he kept it inside. But well, because the last thing they showed us with the dog leg had a commercial building parked up in the upper.
Right. Well, we don't know what they're going to do. Right. We don't know what they're going to come apply with. And so I'm just saying that I like to see.
So you,
not giving them, I mean, if we give them the ability to go follow the neighborhood retail guidelines, that's saying, hey, that's more intense than the other. So I just would rather have.
So you don't want any retail in on that partial?
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Intensity is not defined.
Well, I'm just saying part of that, a big chunk of that parcel is.
Commercial opportunities.
Is the retail zone.
Maybe it's not intense
in order to improve commercial.
Well, height and density, I guess. That's what to me, I'm labeling intensity into the intense land use.
But see, this piece is in there too. You don't want to change that use.
Kind of the intent here, isn't it?
Right. You don't want this to be less intense, right? This is the retail.
Right.
Because they're proposed. See, that's the problem. Is this property encompasses two different subzones?
Right.
So they're proposing on commercial on this part. And then their congregate care on this part.
People are, I think, retail plays to the general plan.
Does that make sense?
Well, they may. They may come back with a different.
Well, I'm saying that's what they have done in the past.
Yeah, right.
That's
been the past. They've done that.
Right.
But they may do something different.
It is.
Now they have the ability to.
So you're saying you don't want retail in here?
While you guys are arguing, we're trying to figure out a motion down
okay.
here.
Okay.
Yes. Good idea.
We're discussing, Glenn. That's our job, is to discuss.
Yes, to
a
point.
We're a deliberative body.
When we beat the dog to death and it's time to move on.
It's not your bedtime yet, Glenn. Come on.
I thought all night for this.
I thought it was 9. We have like a half an hour.
We got another item on here yet, too.
That's true.
So is there a motion?
It's a quick one, though.
Yet, or?
Here's what I'll read. Let me read some before I actually make the motion. So let me just read this to you. So the motion would be to recommend finding of fact, and I would say keep 4 Rosegate in there because that is specific. This is specific to this development.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
That's fair enough.
So 4 Rosegate, located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive, to the City Council, allowing the developer to proceed with preliminary plans of the finding of fact. So we're saying that twice. Proceed with preliminary plans. Well, let me just finish it.
Strike out preliminary plans and put in conceptual site plan.
Proceed with conceptual site plans.
Yeah, because it'll start the whole process over again. With preliminary, go back to the site plan review committee. It just would reset the process.
Yeah. Okay, so to recommend. What have we said? To recommend finding of fact for Rosegate, located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive, to the City Council, allowing the developer to proceed with the conceptual site plans. And I don't know that we want to say whether finding of fact again.
No, skip just straight.
So we skip that. With conceptual site plans to meet the intent of the SC subzones, mixed use office, retail, and neighborhood subzones, that it is necessary for the proposed congregate care facility to traverse these two subzones in an effort to maximize park-like open space visible and accessible to the public and reduce the scale of the building, in particular along the southern property line adjacent to the single-family residences, thereby meeting the intent of the SC1 zone and design guidelines for commercial development. Let's see, I left.
The one-to-one swap.
Do we say subject to a one-to-one trade or?
Yeah.
Or,
well, subject to whatever, yeah, that's where the list comes.
Well, I've kind of already listed 2 of the items.
What about a commitment to having sales tax generating retail. As part of their application?
On one-to-one trade, it would be the, on the trade that it would
So you're no hair salons or dentist offices or any sales tax.
I mean, you could say subject to one-to-one trade between commercial mixed-use office retail and neighborhood retail in order to improve commercial opportunities along the west side of. I said commercial. I know there was discussion about whether we say.
I would like to work retail there instead of commercial. But just me talking. On the west side.
West side. How do we say that? West side, or do we say along the proposed?
To maximize.
I'm like Brad. I like Stan.
West side, north south.
No, we don't want those.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but don't go to commercial.
I know. That's why we have retail.
We're kind of going to retail.
I'm bringing that up because that is the primary purpose of that sub-district, is to generate sales tax revenue. And
provide services for residents. There's two things there. It's not just for sales tax.
Right. I understand. But I think this facility would be hard-pressed to get approved along the way if there's not some sales tax-generating activities. That's just my opinion.
But I'm just but there's a lot of uses that are conditionally permitted in that that are not sales tax-generating. So I don't see how you can justify limiting it that way.
You don't want to hear what we're saying.
You don't want to hear that.
So while Jeff is working on that, I'm just going to express a couple of my concerns. I know there was a opinion of a lawyer that was circulated amongst the commission, and I practice in real estate and land use, not heavily, but I do it as part of my practice. And my concern here is if you were to get 10 attorneys or 10 judges, for that matter, to look at our design guidelines and our general plan, you may come up with different views, and depending on their perspective or what their intent was in doing a review. That being said, my concern in our discussion, I think we're equating different terms like retail and commercial, and those terms I think are being used depending on our point of view. Sales tax versus tax base. I'm not sure that any of the documents, our general plan or our guidelines, specifically define those. I think they may mean, when they say tax base, to mean sales tax base, but I'm not sure. Anyway, all that being said, I think there's some ambiguity and some confusion there. I think there's a lot of gray area. And so I think we as a body need to be focused on making sure that what we do is that we convey a clear what our intent is. We convey that clearly to the city council, because we're not the decision maker. We're the advisory body. And my primary concern through all of this is, I think we've been confident moving forward in various steps of the process that the city council would move forward based on our recommendations, and they haven't for whatever reason. They have different motivations than we do. As you know, we're not elected here. We serve at the behest of the mayor, and so I think there's different motivations, different concerns that they may be answering to. But again, our job is to vet the process and make sure that the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, so the city council can make a decision. But ultimately, all we can do is make recommendations. So with that being said, I think this is all a good exercise. I just hope that we're not putting you through another step, another exercise in futility and traversing zones. I just hope that that's not what we're doing. Because again, you've joked about being 2 years. It's been a lot of time and effort from everybody in this room. But there's nothing we can do. We can try to make this process move forward so it's constructive, but we can't guarantee anything here.
Maybe one sentence from the guidelines, neighborhood retail. The main focus of the neighborhood retail sub-district is provided area for those sales tax generating commercial entities. So if we put in our motion that they need to have sales tax generating, at least that, we're saying they don't have to be the main focus, because they won't be. We're basically saying, we'll set aside the main focus part, but we at least want some sales tax generating. I think that if they don't provide that, I think they'd be hard pressed to get approval through the pathway. My
are you ready?
What about a computer?
I'm trying to make this weird sensible.
Give it a crack, Jeff.
Yeah.
While he's working on that, could I just suggest, I had another comment that I wanted to make real quick is, while the credit union's coming in and doing their approval, I know that the building, the site plan's all approved, but we met with the power company, and I think that if the city encouraged them, we could bury those power lines out front. I've gotten a preliminary bid of about $100,000 from the power company. We'd pick up the other half if they could pick up their half. I don't think AmSource will participate, but now's the time to do it. You've got those beautiful sycamore trees there. Those trees are going to start growing into the power lines. If we can sink those, if the Boy Scouts would ask them, they would just do it. They have endless amounts of money. They want to be accepted in the community, all those kind of things. They want you to put the deposits in there. If there was a way that we could have that conversation, or the city could have that conversation, I'm going to have the conversation. I've already talked to the broker about it. I'm going to suggest it. But if we can get those power lines buried, we can bury them all the way up to the corner. If the medical offices wanted to bury them underneath and get it past that elementary school, it'd just be amazing to get those buried. To bury them behind the residence, behind our building, it was about $36,000. Now, these are base costs just to get them down, and then you have to buy the generators on top of that. So in my site plan approval, I'm going to be talking about that. I'd like to get those down on both sides. I'd like to still provide, we've already met with the canal company, the pipe can be abandoned in the backs of all those people's backyards, and they're willing to sign that. The city has to sign it, and the canal company has already said they'd sign it. So we can get the canal, that out of there so they can actually plant trees there. In the 15 feet that we have there, unless we can massage the building a little more, we'd like to take 5 of that feet and still dedicate it to those residents over there. We'd still like to do all of those things. The power lines is probably my number one priority because it just does not look good coming up that draw. Did that give you enough time, Jeff, to write that motion? So those are just a few things.
What? Wait. Oh.
We can yes. Have questions after when he makes the motion.
I have a comment, though.
You want to make a comment?
I want just to address David's comment. Okay. Because he didn't go on reading in his section there. It says, sub-district that is provide an area for those sales tax generating commercial entities that benefit from frontage of a major collector, i.e. 4800 West Canyon Road, SR-146, Searles Drive. Commercial uses that are not focused on generating on-site sales should be encouraged to utilize properties that do not front 4800 West Canyon Road or Cedar Hills Drive in the mixed-use office retail.
So I think that this would meet the do not front 4800 West or Cedar Hills Drive.
Okay, I would entertain a motion. All right, here goes. I would make the following motion. Recommend to City Council a finding of fact for the proposed Congregate Care Rosegate facility located at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive to allow the developer to proceed with conceptual site plans that traverse two SC-1 subzones, namely mixed-use office/retail and neighborhood retail, in an effort to maximize park-like open spaces visible and accessible to the public and reduce the scale of the building along the southern property line, particularly adjacent to single-family homes, thereby meeting the intent of the SC1 zone and design guidelines for commercial development, subject to a one-to-one area trade between commercial mixed-use office retail and neighborhood retail in order to improve
Now, do we want to say commercial opportunities at the west side of the site along the proposed north-south access road located at approximately 4700 West?
Let's say retail.
Period.
That's it. Okay. Retail,
but... Was that a motion or was that just you?
That was a motion. Motion.
Okay. So, second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Other comments or questions?
Discussion.
Discussion. Yeah.
There's one thing I would add to the motion. On the one-to-one part, I would say, or substantially
similar.
Similar amount. Because I don't, we don't,
right.
We don't have a surveyor here that, okay. I don't know if it matches one-to-one, but.
To an approximately one-to-one?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be good.
That's fine. I'd still like to see the word sales tax generating commercial activities in there, but there seems to be some opposition to that.
Well, I just think that's
sales tax revenue generating commercial entities.
But that's not what design guidelines call for. They spell out frontage on 4800 Cedar Hills Drive.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Did we make that? We need to make a motion to.
I put it down as an amendment that was accepted by.
Second.
Amendment. The approximate.
Approximate. Change one-to-one to approximate.
Yep. Further discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes.
Thank you for your time. It was long, but I think it'll be beneficial. And we hope to come back with some
great
stuff.
Can I ask one question, Chandler, even though I'm too late because I forgot it?
Yes.
Say this goes to the council and they decide that they don't want to make that finding of fact. Does the dog leg come back at that point?
I already asked that. He said he would like to be able to C-rate it. He said that earlier.
Well, I mean, if you
because of the demand. For
you know what they say, C's get degrees, so. Right.
What'd you say?
C's get degrees.
Yeah.
You can turn around and stand it on a scene. I have a 10-story tower.
Construction, framing of this proposed building.
No, I appreciate it. I wanted to get that out, but I forgot.
Is it wood?
I asked that earlier.
You want to be real careful on three stories.
I must have been.
I also read that self-statement.
The equivalent of.
But then when you read it the second time, you did read the last time.
They go to three stories, they have to go steal it.
What's that?
So
that sentence about where
I'm being. There's a knife edge you're walking.
It's equivalent. The same as what we've been doing.
But then when you read it the second time, you didn't read the last
discussion of rezoning.
I just want to make sure for those of us with short attention spans.
I wasn't trying to find the general overall intent.
Very careful.
Thanks, sir.
Sales tax sharing
revenue. Right, but there's a lot of retail
things
that don't generate sales.
Thank you.
Right.
Like me.
Are you going to be ready in 2 weeks?
1 week. Yeah. Business services.
What's
it? Dennis.
Because our next meeting is the 26th.
Planned, yes.
Otherwise, it'll be way in the end of.
Hey, is Fred Levine going to be on the next meeting?
He hasn't brought me anything he proposed.
Who?
Bring your architects with you so we can throw rocks at them.
Yeah, I talked to him. He came in. He came in and I said, in order for you to be on the planning commission, you have to have a proposal of some sort. And I have not received any proposal. We'll talk to you later. Okay, so not last meeting, but the meeting before, we talked about possible rezoning throughout the city, especially taking some of what is currently in the R1 20,000 zone and moving it to the R1 15,000 zone. So really, these are the effect. This would be the affected area. These would be the lots that would change, according to the current proposal. And this is subject to change. And the question that the Planning Commission had at that time was, what does that do to densities?
by reducing the requirement for square footage on lots, obviously there's an increase in density. What does that do to those densities? Who gets, what does this change? And so you can see the red is, I'm sorry, the blue is what is currently the densities on each of these lots. And mind you, some of these have a lot already on them. So if it's two, it might be, there might be one lot there already and they have density for another one. The red would be the proposed density if there were to be a change. Now you look at that and you say, okay, we're going to go, we would go from 39 total lots to 50 total lots, so we'd pick up approximately 11 units in this area. However, looking at the lots, looking at the lot sizes, shapes, it would be very difficult for a lot of these lots to achieve their maximum density. For example, you look at the very southern edge, the lowest 4-5, where the 4 and 5s are written on the properties. These are big lots. They're deep lots, but they would be very, it'd be very, very difficult to get 5 lots on there as well as an access. So although they have the density, I don't believe that there's a way that they could possibly get the full density when they developed, if that makes sense. So this was the analysis that this body asked for. So are there any questions looking at this?
So the blue is what they currently have?
Blue is what they currently have. Red is what they would have.
What is, could be proposed.
It's a good map. It's good analysis.
So, and to be honest, some of these lot lines on this 2010 map, the county website has some new, the lot lines are different on some of them. So if you look at some of these lots and say, oh no, this one should be a little bit more, a little bit less, it's because the county lot lines are a little bit different in some of these lots. But
either my memory's not intact or I missed that meeting. What's the premise or rationale for this entire topic of
the premise behind it is we want to propose some zone changes throughout the city. Some of them were changing some of the public parks, which are currently zoned like R1 and then whatever zone they're in, move them over to the public facilities zone. And we also want to, we had talked about moving some of these R1 20,000 lots into the R1 15,000 zone.
Why does the city want to?
Right now, they are in the R1 20,000 zone and they are legal non-conforming lots. And it would take them from being legal non-conforming lots to put them in a zone where they're legal conforming lots.
What's non-conforming about them?
So if you look at Mahogany Drive, which is this road, right? Where is that? I just lost it. Right here. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Those aren't half acre. Those are about a third of an acre lots. So they're in the R1 20,000, which is the half acre lot zone, but none of them are a half an acre. They're all a third of an acre. They're all 15,000 square feet.
So all the white ones are non-conforming.
All the white ones wouldn't get any density changes.
But they're not currently non-conforming.
A lot of them are not currently conforming.
So what if we do pursue this, what's the outcome or consequence?
Well, this all came up because we had a resident that wants to subdivide a couple pieces of these non-conforming lots and build a lot. And if you were to drive up the street there, it's on 9220 North.
That's what came before our body, right? That
Ben Euler. Yeah, he came before this body before. And his proposal, when he came to this body, utilized part of the property that was to the south of him, which is, sorry, I wish I could have this on the screen here, but yeah. It's 4-5. And it was illegal. It'd create legal lots. However, the owner of that property backed out of selling that property to him, so then he was back to proposing a non-conforming lot. We went to the Board of Adjustment, and the Board of Adjustment met twice to discuss this issue and had a hung jury both times.
So this individual's not yet cannot move forward?
Cannot move forward. So the thought was in discussions with him, well, hey, if we, because his argument, and it's a valid argument, is, look, all these, I'm asking for a lot the same size as all of the lots around us, to be a third acre lot. But as a zoning body, as a zoning official for the city, as a planner, I can't approve something that I know doesn't meet the code. So I had to say no. So the thought was, well, you know, if these lots aren't conforming, but they're legal, why don't we put them in the zone that's already created, the R1 15,000 zone, and make them conforming lots?
Is there a zone that goes the opposite direction that allows for larger lot sizes?
I don't understand your question.
Well, we're talking about, we're essentially talking about shrinking.
Shrinking the required lot size.
Right. I'm just...
Is there a zone...
So I'm gonna, let me reveal my bias, okay? So here's my bias. I feel like Cedar Hills doesn't have that many lots left in our city that are big in nature. Mm-hmm. And I hate to see us take some that are big in size and then say, you're too big, you're non-conforming, you need to be a third of an acre. So I kind of like the idea that they're big. Okay. I'm just revealing my bias here.
Okay. And let me just go over that real fast. So look at one of the 4 or 5 lots where they currently have a density of 4 and it'd go to 5. Right? So right now, some of these lots could, you see the blue 4, they have the density to have 4 lots on their property. By moving them to the R1 15,000, they'd get that 5th lot. However, the area requirements and the frontage requirements that would come from being a part of that zone, just like they would be for part of the R1 20,000 zone, would really prevent them from getting all of their density because they would have to put in a road. So it takes out part of their land. And then each lot has to meet certain area requirements. The homes have to meet certain area requirements. So even though this is the density, there's no guarantee that they're going to get that.
So they don't have to be at the 15. They could be larger.
They could be larger.
You could subdivide them. Yeah, you
can't be smaller. They can't be smaller than 15,000
right.
square feet. And a lot of these lots that are the 5-4 lots, I can't see them putting more than 3 lots on them when they put in the road and the utility and the public right-of-ways. So really, the added density I don't really think comes into play here.
I don't necessarily mind helping this particular property owner because I'm all about property rights and those sorts of things, helping this individual complete their dream of subdividing and building a nice little neighborhood and such. But I don't know if I want to. I'd like to find a pathway to help them do that without identifying all the other lots in the city or along. It's basically because this person wants to do this, we're going to take all of the lots and make them.
I don't know that it's necessarily because this person wants to do this. I think there's a degree that it makes sense to take these lots that are non-conforming and put them in a zone where the legal description of the zone fits better.
How did they come about?
That's a good question. When a lot of these lots on Canyon Road, they've been boundary adjusted into the city over the course of the year.
Okay. Former Pleasant Grove. Years.
So they're former Pleasant Grove lots or former county lots.
Can you speak to the weird little finger of Pleasant Grove that crosses Canyon Road and there's like these random lots that are PG?
Talking about these ones right here. Don't
think about that. Residents.
This whole thing.
Residents back then got to pick which city they wanted to live in.
How long ago?
I don't know.
Jenny,
decades ago.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have nothing pleasant to say about it.
There's a long history. Don't ask an old farmer about it.
I'll give you the.
Is it Hatfields and McCoys or something?
Yeah.
What's that?
Is it like Hatfields and McCoys?
It's a little bit like Hatfields.
Pretty much.
Really?
I can give you just a quick background. So when the city was incorporated back in 1977, it was incorporated for the reason that the city needed to provide some services to the residents. It was county land at that point, and they went to Pleasant Grove, and they went to these other cities and said, hey, will you please provide services to us? We want to be a part of your community. And a lot of these communities said no. So the city, Cedar Hills at the town, I guess it was unincorporated county, said, okay, we're going to put our big boy pants on, and we're going to provide these services ourselves. So the city went out and incorporated in 1977 and started providing services to the residents that were incorporated at the very beginning. And that would be these residents here in the old town in the center of the city. These other residents were part of either Pleasant Grove or county.
Okay.
And they kind of had a decision at one point where they either had to go county or they had to go Pleasant Grove. Or they had to go Cedar Hills, they had to go Pleasant Grove. And there you can see that it was a mixed bag there. And so our southern border has been a mess ever since. That's kind of the Reader's Digest version.
I live on the southern border, and I'm surrounded by the Pleasant Grove
people.
I'm every other
One neighbor's Pleasant Grove, one neighbor's Cedar Hills, one neighbor's
Yeah. The tide's turning, though. Now that these residents aren't getting the services they want, they're coming to Cedar more and more every year, more and more coming to Cedar
Hills. More and more are coming into Cedar Hills?
We actually are dealing with an issue right now. There's a street that they have 11 homes on. It's their 4,000 North. I can't remember what it's ours. Anyway, they don't have a sewer line there. They have a sewer line there. They want to tap into our sewer line. So we said, at one point, great, you can tap into our sewer line. But when that person sells their home to somebody else, they have to boundary adjust into Cedar Hills. And that was a no-go.
You're talking about Trent Thane, probably.
Why does it matter?
They say that's a deal breaker.
I'm from Pleasant Grove.
Yeah, blame Chandler.
I love Pleasant Grove.
You look a little different.
I lived in Pleasant Grove for 25 years, and there are some old-timers in Pleasant Grove that would rather die and roll up in their graves than leave Pleasant Grove.
You have a Cedar Hills passport. You're supposed to have a passport.
Is it the library or I mean, what's the?
No, I honestly don't know. It's a lot of the old timers.
Weird thing.
But you know, to that end, we've met with. I had a meeting yesterday morning with a resident about boundary adjusting. I met last week with a resident about boundary adjusting. A lot of these people are on septic systems, and as those septic systems fail, there becomes this urgent need for access to sewer.
Well, they're limited in what they can.
They can't.
They're limited in what they can do to repair them.
If their septic system fails completely, they need to connect to the sewer.
Right.
The county and the cities are not going to allow them to put in a new septic system.
They'll all eventually be Cedar Hills.
So the Cedar Hills has sewer lines in these roads, and Pleasant Grove does not. And so Pleasant Grove says, "Will you provide these services to our residents?" And we say, "Yeah, as long as there are residents."
I'll tell you one reason why going back to the topic at hand, one reason why they choose to be in Pleasant Grove is because that sewer line is to make them have conforming lots.
Right there, my
house. Oh.
It's this road that we were talking
their
about.
Their code enforcement doesn't make it as far north. Yeah. So, but that's kind of the reason, this rationale behind the strange border there. We're not really deciding anything tonight. This is just a discussion. I wanted to get direction from the Planning Commission on if to proceed or how to proceed with this.
So, summarizing, in a nutshell, potentially we would create 11 additional lots where there are 39 total available lots. If they're subdivided, it would go to a possible total of 50.
Possible total of 50.
Likely something in the middle between those two.
I'm going to go on a limb here and say likely less than 39. A lot of these lots that are able,
they're not going to subdivide,
that have the density, don't have the shape. So I mean, you look at this one right here.
Understood.
You're not going to get five houses. You're not going to get four.
You're
going to
get four. You're going to get two or three.
So yeah. Okay. So I actually think the density is actually much lower when you actually start doing the engineering and the proposals.
Now that's just a change in the available lots. You're also talking about some animal rights issues.
Yeah. Let's go over that. So one of the things is you drive down Canyon Road, you see a lot of people have horses.
Yeah.
And so the one thing that The main issue that is found in the R1 20,000 zone but is not found in the R1 15,000 zone is large animal rights. Now, with the actual physical lot sizes not changing, I would propose that this body allow for animal units or large animal rights to be included in R1 15,000 zone, because if you read the code on the large animal units, it's all based on agricultural area. It's all based on how much land is dedicated to the raising, taking care of the animals. That's not going to change if you're in the R115 or the R120. If you have 10,000 square feet, you still have the 10,000 square feet the day after the zoning would change. So I don't see why they couldn't have the large animal right. But you see these houses on Mahogany, these third acre lots, they have horse rights right now. But they have nowhere to put a horse. So it's not like we're going to give somebody an animal right that shouldn't have it, because they would still need to meet that requirement of the management area for the large animal units.
When you say they have horse rights, you mean because of the fact they're in the R?
Yeah, R1 20,000 has large animal units.
Right.
So I propose bringing that down to the R1 15.
Citywide or just...
This would be the only R1 15,000 in the entire city. There's nowhere in the city that
so it doesn't affect anywhere else.
Doesn't affect anywhere else.
So those currently on a 20,000 square foot lot, and we zone it back to 15,000, they would still have grandfather clause to keep it at 20,000, wouldn't they?
No.
With all the rights and privileges of a 20,000.
The rights would be grandfathered in. The rights would be grandfathered in, but not the zone. So,
right.
So if, let's say that this body wasn't amenable to adding in large animal rights. They could keep their large animal rights as long as they lived on the property. Now, once the property changed hands, they'd have to get rid of the large animals. But a lot of people sell their property as a horse property. So we'd want to make sure they still had that availability because it's still there.
They lose that right when they sell their house, even though they're
if you were to change the zones from R20 to R15,
right,
and not give the R15 zone the animal rights,
right,
they would be grandfathered in with what they currently have. But once they sold, they wouldn't be able to advertise it as a horse
right.
property.
So we would need to give them that right again.
We would need to add that right into the R15,000 zone.
Okay.
Just so you know, I'm all about that. I'm all about the animal being so.
So we're creating a new zone.
The zone's already created. The zone's already been created. It's in the code book as an established zone.
Nothing's zoned that.
It's just not found in the city. Yeah. So that's the nice thing is that the zone is already there.
It doesn't have animal rights as it currently exists in the code.
I don't think it does. Could you look on that for me?
That's a question.
I don't believe it does. I thought I looked on that, and I don't believe it does.
Anyway, you slice it, this would involve public hearings, adjacent property owners.
All of the property owners would be notified, and even the surrounding area would be notified, and they'd be able to come in and speak their piece. But the whole point is if we were going to do this, was to not adversely affect anybody. So if you say, well, I live on this big property and I live here because I have horses, and you're going to take that away from me, that's a problem. And right. I could see people getting really worked up about that. But if that is still allowable, the only difference is if you subdivide your lot, you get more density. I can't imagine too many people arguing about that.
And then the alternative, if I live adjacent to one of these lots, and now suddenly they have large animal rights, how does that impact?
Nobody in this zone is gaining animal rights.
And that, my point is just that that's the alternative that we also need to make clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to just suddenly buy a horse now and put it in your backyard.
Right. You would need the necessary land, the 5,000 square feet for one horse or 10,000 square feet for two horses. So if you already have that, that's not going to change.
That's not true. They already have that right.
Yeah.
That small animal rights is all we have.
Yeah, so they don't have the large animal rights.
No, didn't realize it was this bad.
The border?
Yeah.
This is an old map. I can look and pinpoint a number of things that are wrong on it. It's really hard to keep up with the comings and goings of properties.
Clear up here on Cedar Hills.
So summing up the animal rights part. We're not granting anybody animal rights now that doesn't already have it.
No.
And we're just saying that we're not going to take them away from you by changing it to R1 15,000.
Yes. You're going to keep your animal rights. The same exact animal rights that you have now, you have in the next zone.
Okay.
No problem.
And we'll give you the ability to subdivide.
And potentially get one more lot out of your...
That's really the only change.
Out of your lot.
That's really the only change.
Okay.
And that the $15,000 square foot lots are now legal.
Yeah.
Conforming.
So it'd make those ones conforming.
Yeah.
I still like large lots. I'd be
no worries.
I'd vote no.
Well, this isn't a vote, but
I don't
appreciate feedback. But as far as direction, is this something that you would like us to proceed with, as long with the other the zone changes that we proposed? That was like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah, I'm all right.
You're doing it just to be contrary. I'm fine.
Not. Yes.
I really don't want to see smaller lots.
But like the guy I bought my lot from tried to get with the neighbor because they both had, we're in the R20,000, and they both had 3/4 of an acre. So they decided, hey, if we split a quarter acre off, we could make another lot. But they couldn't make it size-wise. It just didn't. There was no way to put a building on it because of the shapes.
Yeah.
That met the city's requirements.
So like I said, even though they have the density, they may not be able to use it in a lot of these cases.
Right. And that was, they were thinking with the 2 3/4 acre lots, they could come up with three half-acre lots.
Yeah.
But there was no way to do it shape-wise.
Next item is discussion on schedule, a special meeting to review the commercial guidelines. Can that be on our 26th meeting?
Yes.
In the event that
I don't
blue line
have
doesn't show?
I don't believe that they will show. I don't believe that they will have anything in time for that meeting.
So let's do it the 26th.
I don't have anything else that's pressing that's coming up. So if we can dedicate the 26th night, and we'll do it here, probably in the conference room on the other end of the building here, we'll get as far as we can in one night.
Sounds good.
So I would just ask that everyone go through the commercial site guidelines. We went through them pretty extensively tonight, but make recommendations, come with suggestions, come ready to talk about it.
So will there be other agenda items permitted that night?
That is the only thing we're gonna keep that as the, because that's the reason this has been put off so long, is because it's always the last thing on the agenda.
In the off chance the blue line is ready and has a proposal, will that supersede this?
Do we just table it, or
there is a chance.
I will tell you that there is anxiety on the city council to get this done.
I agree with Councilmember Reese that I feel that anxiety. I hear about it, so I really want to get it done.
Guidelines or blue lines?
Guidelines.
I know it may not happen, but
blue lines have been waiting 2 years. They can wait another month.
Can we order out for pizza or something?
You got it.
Done.
Little sleezers. Let's do it.
So Fred Levine may surprise you if I want to be on the agenda this month.
Now, Fred Levine has been proposing a subdivision in his property that is similar to what the gentleman before is proposing, where he wants to take a lot and bypass some of the code.
Right.
And as a, like I said before, as the planning official, zoning official for the city, I can't turn a blind eye to select code and enforce others. So if his proposal doesn't meet code, I can't bring it to this body. It would have to go directly to the Board of Adjustment for a variance and then come to this body. But until then, but I don't have a proposal from him. Because he has that lot behind his house, and he wants to put a house on it. And right now, he can put a house on it. But he doesn't want to put in the sidewalk and dedicate the road right away, mm-hmm. or tear out his tree and get around all this other stuff that every other subdivision goes through. So that's really the hang-up.
So going back to your statement, though, I mean, we've had lots of things on our agenda that don't meet code that are still on our agenda. Rosegate's a perfect example of that. You said a moment ago you don't bring things here unless they meet code. But we have lots of...
And I guess I'm not really understanding your question, because it blatantly doesn't meet code. I mean,
right.
I guess
it's a procedural question, right? Is it?
We could probably end this meeting.
Yeah, we probably end this meeting. I have a motion.
I move that we adjourn.
Yeah. Our chairman's leaving, so.
No, I was just going to give this to
him. Oh, okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 We're adjourned. Thank you all.